All right, turn in your Bible, please, to the book of Kings, 1 Kings. Tomorrow is an inauguration. 47th president, same president as the 45th president. We had a little in between, and I think that according to the polls, people are glad that the in-between is not there any longer. There's an excitement that seems to be in the nation right now. At least the people that I talk with. You say, yeah, but you talk to idiots. Well, that could be so. But I know that that there is an optimism that's there right now. But I want us to remember this, that every man and every woman that is in Washington, D.C., that are going to be making decisions for us, and every man and every woman that's in Atlanta that's making decisions for the state of Georgia, they are human, which means that they have sin natures. That means that they are going to be tempted to do evil. I don't think there's anybody in this room that probably has more temptations than those people that walk in the corridors of power. They face temptations that you and I have a hard time even comprehending. Now, we think that, well, nobody's ever been tempted like us, when we really probably don't even know the half of it. I know that the ones that I have are hard enough without having to have it multiplied by 1,000. Human nature is the same, whether it's in 2025 or whether it's during the time of the kings. And when you read about the time of the kings, once you get past Solomon, it is what is called the divided kingdom. You had a man named Rehoboam. It was Solomon's boy. And Solomon had taxed the people very, very heavily. And when Solomon died and he took over, some of the older, wiser men came to him and they said, "You're young, but if you want to get the heart of the people, what you need to do is you need to lessen their burden. You need to take the taxes and make them less. The people are struggling." But some of the young men that were his buddies, they said, no, you need to enhance the taxes. You need to put a bigger burden on the people, and you'll have more money coming into the treasury, and you'll be able to do grand things, even more so than your father Solomon. And he thought about it, and you know, he decided to listen to the young men. And he told the old people, he said, "Let me tell you something." He said, "My father, he beat you with whips. He said, I will scourge you with scorpions." In other words, I will beat you harder than he has ever even thought about it. And with that decision, there was a rebellion that began in the heart of the nation of Israel. And it wasn't long before that nation split. You had a northern half that had 10 tribes in it and a southern half that had 2 tribes in it. The northern tribe became known as Israel. The southern became known as Judah. Now, Judah and Benjamin were those two, but Benjamin was such a small group that the name just kind of got absorbed. And so when you read about Judah, you're talking about the south. When you read about Israel, you're talking about the north. The 7 kings that we're going to look at quickly this morning, they're evil. When you think about those northern kings, there was not one single one of them that loved God the way that they should have. And I want you to just remember this, that whether it is 2,800 years ago or today, people that are in charge do not always love God. They may love the power. I think it was Lord Acton that made this statement. He says that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And I have great hopes for the next 4 years, but I will not have my head in the sand. I'm not going to be the proverbial ostrich. I will still look and I will see what's going on. There's a quote that came from James Russell Lowell. It said that truth is forever on a scaffold and wrong is forever on the throne. We're going to see evil rear its head. If you think that evil is gone, you're deluded. Abortion is still rampant in America. It's just that they have gotten so good at sanitizing it, no longer do they have to go and have a procedure done at an office or a facility somewhere. Now you just pop a pill. Evil is still around. All of the nonsense that we've seen in the universities and some of the businesses that we call DEI, that has kind of began to wane now, but it'll make a comeback. Don't ever doubt that. We'll show you some Bible verses here in just a moment, but I want you to see that as the kingdom split, the first king that they had was a man named Jeroboam. We have a list of seven that are there. I want you to look with me at chapter 12, and I want you to listen to these words. Look at verse 28. Now, Jeroboam sat on the throne for 22 years, whereupon the king took counsel and made two calves of gold and said unto them, it is too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. Behold thy gods, O Israel, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. He put one in Bethel and he put the other in Dan. And this thing became a sin, for the people went to worship before the one, even unto Dan. What had taken place was this. God had commanded that you were to go to Jerusalem, and that's where everybody was to come several times a year, and that's where they were to worship. But where was Jerusalem at? It was in the southern part of Israel. It was in what is called Judah. Jeroboam said, if these people keep going to Jerusalem, then they will develop a heart for the south, and I will not be able to be the king any longer of the north. So what he did was he took two calves. They made themselves idols. He took one of those calves, that idol, and he put it in the city of Bethel, and he put the other one in the territory known as Dan up in the north. When you've heard a preacher like me say, from Dan to Beersheba, that means from the northernmost part to the southernmost part of Israel. Dan was way up north. And so you've got these calves that are there. But that's not what God said to do. God said, what I want you to do is go to Jerusalem, to the temple, and that is where you worship. And Jeroboam said, we've got to change that. And so he led the nation of Israel into idolatry. Isn't that one of the big ten? Thou shalt have no other gods before me. You're not supposed to be idol makers. And you and I are not to be idol makers. But yet if we're not careful, we will set things and people up on pedestals, and our faith and our gaze will look at them instead of the Lord. And Jeroboam began a descending progression downward. I guess that's redundant. Descending would be downward, but it's a downward progression. And the second one, which was his son, was a man named Nadab. I want you to look with me at chapter 15. And I want you to look beginning in verse 25. And I hope that I type these things out right. And Nadab, the son of Jeroboam, began to reign over Israel in the second year of Asa, king of Judah. Now, if you're not careful, when you're reading, you'll kind of conflate these. But Asa is the king of the south, and he has been the king for 2 years in the south. And now Nadab, his father has died, and he has taken over. And what does it say in verse 26? He did evil in the sight of the Lord and walked in the ways of his father and in the sin wherewith he made Israel to sin. So what we have is we've got Nadab. He is now 2 years into his reign. His father had been a king for 22 years in Israel. And here he is, he's only 2 years into it, and he gets assassinated. Who assassinates him? That's number three, Baasha. I want you to look with me at verse 34. And it says that he did evil in the sight of the Lord and walked in the way of Jeroboam, and in his sin, Jeroboam's sin, wherewith he made Israel to sin. In other words, the same thing that Jeroboam began, you've got Nadab and now Baasha, and they are continuing in that progression downward. Look at chapter 16. I want you to look with me at verse 8. We see the fourth evil king. His name is Elah, all right? And so it's in the 20 and 6th year of Asa, the last king. He was only 3 years into it. And now here in the 26th year of Asa began Elah, the son of Baasha, to reign over Israel in Tirzah 2 years. And so you have this guy, and he is 2 years. And what does he do? He causes Israel to continue to sin, and he gets assassinated. Look at the next man. I want you to look at Zimri. Look at chapter 16. We'll back up. Let's go to chapter 10, or chapter 16, verse 10. All right? And it says, and Zimri went in and smote him and killed him. That's the assassination. But I want you to know how wicked Zimri is. And it says that he reigned in his stead. And it came to pass when he began to reign. In other words, at the very beginning, this is how brutal these men are. It says, when he sat on the throne, immediately he slew all the house of Baasha. And it says that he left him not one that pisseth against the wall. Now, we usually don't say things like that, but it's in the Bible, so I read it. What that is a euphemism. And what that simply means is this, that he took his family, every single one of them, all the way down to the little boys. Now, if you know little boys, you know that they're just liable to just do number one anywhere. I remember hearing a preacher tell this story talking about human nature. He said, I had a son and he was 5 years old and we were having a birthday party for him. And he said, we invited his little buddies to come over. And he said, I just decided to see how rebellious these little boys were. He said, so I called all of them together. There was about 10 or 12 of them there. He said, now boys, let me tell you something. I want you to have fun in this backyard. He said, but you see that flower pot right there? He said, don't you go to the bathroom in that flower pot. I'm telling you, don't you do that. Well, he said, y'all understand? We understand. He went inside and walked over to the window where he could look between the blind and outside and he could see that flower pot. He said within 20 minutes, every single one of those boys had gone by and done that. Little boys are apt to do things like that. And every one of those little kids, that little boys that would do something like that, instead of going to an outhouse somewhere, those little boys were killed by this evil man. And so we see that he is descending even farther. I want you to look now at chapter 16, verse 18 and 19. And it came to pass that when Zimri saw that the city was taken. Now I want you to get this. He has killed these boys quick. Zimri was king for 1 week. Now he's killed all these people in a week. 7 days. Well, he's caused his own public relations problem. And there is a rebellion that is brewing. And so what does he do? He sets fire to the palace and he burns the house down on himself. He sees that the city was taken. He goes into the palace of the king's house and burnt the king's house over him with fire, and he died. For his sins, which he sinned in doing evil in the sight of the Lord and walking in the ways of Jeroboam, and in his sin, which he did to make Israel to sin. So what happened next? A man named Omri. Look at verse 25. But Omri wrought evil in the eyes of the Lord and did worse than all that were before him. In other words, Jeroboam did bad. Nadab did bad. Baasha did bad. Eli did bad. Zimri did bad. And Omri, he's done worse than all of them. And so he did worse than those that were before, for he walked in all the way of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, and in his sin, wherewith he made Israel to sin, to provoke the Lord God of Israel to anger and their vanities. The word vanities there means their foolishness, their foolish acts. So you've got Omri. But then, the worst of all, I want you to look at verse 29. And in the 30th and 8th year of Asa. So all of these kings are coming and going. Asa is still on the throne down in the south in Judah. But now you've got Ahab, the son of Omri. He reigned over Israel in Samaria 22 years. Now I've got 21 years up on the board. Sometimes, depending on how you are counting it, there are some people that count any portion of a year as a whole year, and there are some people that count a portion of a year as nothing. It's got to be a full year. And so when I wrote this down, it has the idea of Ahab in his 21 full years, but if you're counting it the way that the Jewish people sometimes count it, he had a part of another year, so they give him 22. All right? And so you've got Ahab, and he is the worst. And it says that he did evil above all that were before him. And it says, and it came to pass as if it had been a light thing for him to walk in the sins of Nebat, or Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, that he took to wife Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal. Ethbaal is a king that was named for the Phoenician god Baal or Baal. Now there are many different types of Baal, but that is probably the most well-known pagan deity in all the Old Testament. Now when you read in the Bible about Baal or then Baalim, with an I-M on the end of it, that simply means it's plural. So there are many Baals. And here, this woman that we know as Jezebel, she is now married to the worst king in Israel's history. Not the south, but the north. Of the first seven kings, Ahab is by far the worst, and it only gets exacerbated, it only gets magnified by the woman that he marries. I don't know of any woman in the Old Testament, with the exception of Jezebel's daughter. Her name is Athaliah. Athaliah did her best to kill everybody in the royal family. And it got down to one little boy that they hid, and I think when he was seven, they finally brought him out. But everybody else had been killed, and the line of Christ got down to one little man. Jezebel raised a girl like that. When you think about Jezebel, I want you to think about somebody that on the outward, she may have been gorgeous to the world, but she was hell incarnate inside. She absolutely was one godless, wicked woman. She had 450 prophets of Baal, and she had 400 prophets of Asheroth. And she was feeding them from the food from the palace. Why? Because she wanted them to pass paganism all through that nation. She wanted nothing to do with Jehovah. That's how godless she was. Probably the story that I just absolutely can get in the skin about is one when Ahab, he looks over close to where the palace is, and he sees a plot of land, and it is plush. Oh, it is a beautiful vineyard. It's got fence rows that are there to keep the foxes out. I mean, those vines have been pruned, and I mean, every year it is producing huge clusters of grapes. And Ahab goes, I want that. And so he goes to Naboth and he says, I want to buy that, and I'll give you better land somewhere else. And Naboth goes, I can't do that. This land belonged to my father. And it belonged to his father and his father. It's been in my family for generations. This is a piece of my life. It's not for sale. And he tried to buy it. And Naboth kept saying, I respect the king. I revere the king. But I cannot sell it. And Ahab got to pouting. And he went into his room and curled up in a fetal position. And Jezebel comes in and she goes, what's the matter with you, big boy? I'm taking a little Tommy license here. What's the matter with you? Why are you so sad? Naboth has got a vineyard that I would like to have, and he won't sell it to me. I'll take care of that. You just let mama, you let mama handle it. And so she concocts a plan. And she gets two people to be liars and false witnesses. And the accusation is made. We heard Naboth curse God and curse the king. And Naboth goes, I did not. Yes, you did. We heard you. And they took that good man. They took him away from his godly wife. And took him away from his children that he was trying to raise in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And they lied about him. And they took him and they stoned him to death. And the king took that property because he wanted it. And because of that, the old prophet of God said, God's going to judge you for that. And if we're not going to get to it today. But at some point, maybe in the near future, maybe I'll preach on the death of Ahab and Jezebel. But the old prophet said, that's not right. And this is what God's going to do. God's going to kill you. And he did kill him. But Naboth was already dead. And Jezebel, I got that for you, big boy. I got it for you. So let me tell you something. Just because you're a Christian, Just because you're a saint of God does not mean that somebody may not come against you if they don't like you. If you have something they want, they may try to hoodoo you, or they might try to hurt you to get what you have got. You say, do you really believe that would happen? I absolutely believe that. 10 years ago, maybe it's 20 years ago, Alabama, maybe I shouldn't have told you the state because you're going, well, nobody, I'm not surprised now, all right? You know, somebody says, what's the best thing to come out of Alabama? Interstate 20, all right. That's just a joke for those from Alabama. I know we've got Sunita from there, and I know that we got a bunch of guys that like the Crimson Tide, okay? How about that year you had this year? How about Georgia, if you want to say that? Okay. So, I know I've chased that rabbit too far. So anyway, you've got this woman, and she has gotten this vineyard. She's done evil. She's done evil. The story I was going to tell you about Alabama was this. There was a man that won the lottery. Won the lottery. No, he didn't put a new cover on his mobile home. But he decided that we was just going to, you know, just kind of sit on it and just try to figure out what he needed to do, which is a wise decision. Not that I'm telling you to play the lottery. I'm not. You say, would you ever play it? No. Not unless I had a verbal confirmation from heaven and it gave me the numbers twice. And then I might have to do it. But I've never had a verbal communication with heaven except through the Bible. But 3 months later, that man was killed. When the Alabama Bureau of Investigation did the investigation, his sister killed him because she was the beneficiary in his will. So she didn't get the money. She's in the big house. But she killed her brother because she wanted what he wouldn't give her. Evil, evil reigns. Evil's everywhere. It's not just in politicians, it's in us. Evil's there. And that's why we've got to keep short accounts with the Lord. That's why we've got to make sure we're walking with the Lord. And so you've got Naboth, and he is killed, and she takes that. And the prophet of God has to come along and say, your day's coming. Now, what about us? We see this progression going down. Do you think that the days that we live in today are more perilous than 100 years ago? My grandparents slept in a house. They had screens on the windows, but they didn't have air conditioning, but they didn't even lock the doors at night. You say, do you lock your doors at night? Yeah. Yeah, I do. I don't really have anything that's ever been stolen, as far as I know, since we've lived there. But when we were building, I had some tools that were stolen. I had a set of golf clubs that were stolen. You know, I got both of them back. I got both the nail guns and I got my golf clubs back. I'm shocked at that, but I did. But we don't really have crime in our area that I'm aware of. Now, once I saw the Walton County deputy sitting across the street, and so I just went over and said, can I help you? He goes, well, we're not watching your place. We're watching two doors up. And I said, do I need to know anything? He said, well, yes, but I can't tell you. So that night we slept with a loaded 12-gauge. All right. So anyway, we don't really have a problem with that, but you know what? We could. We don't have a country where, you know, most places. Now, if you get into some cities, it gets ugly. But there's places in this world that are tough for Christians. I was looking at an article about 7:30 this morning, and it was stories about ladies in Nigeria. And these ladies, their husbands have been murdered because they're Christians. And these ladies are talking about how that Christ has worked in their heart so that they are doing their best to forgive those people that murdered their husband. They want to forgive. And I'm thinking, man, if that happened, could I do that? Well, I could. I can't at this moment. But I don't need that kind of grace at this moment. But I'm telling you, the days are different today. Now, I want to give you three things this morning. I want you to go with me to the New Testament. I want you to go with me to 2 Timothy. And I want you to remember that it gets worse. Now, there's people in certain theological circles. They're usually called postmillennials or amillennials. And they believe that what's going to happen is that everything is just going to be so great that Jesus is going to have to come back and take the throne. I don't believe that. Now, a postmillennial believes that Jesus is coming back at the end of the thousand-year reign. And amillennials, they just say, oh, there ain't no millennium. They think it's all purely symbolic. I believe that things are going to get worse. You say, what do you believe that on? I'm glad you asked me. 2 Timothy 3, and I want you to look with me at verse number 1. This note that in the last days there'll be perilous times and they're going to come. Now, that word perilous there, it has the idea of dangerous, hard to deal with. So I want to give you three things to help you in these days. Now, we're optimistic today. We think that tomorrow is going to be a glorious time. But if it's not, and we as Christians get our teeth knocked out, as we as people of God begin to have issues just like these New Testament Christians did, I'm going to give you three things that'll help you, right? Number one, I want you to remember those that were before you. Look at verse 10. Timothy, thou hast fully known my doctrine. Now, I want you to know that he says, you have known my doctrine. All right? You might have known some other people's, like your mama and your grandmama, Lois and Eunice, but you've known my doctrine. And he said, you've known my manner of life. You have known my purpose. You've known my faith, my long suffering, my charity, my patience, the persecutions that I've endured, the afflictions which came upon me at Antioch and Iconium at Lystra. Now, at Lystra, they stoned him, left him for dead. And so you've got him, and he's saying, you remember me. And in your Christian life, when those hard times come, and I say this to you young people, if your mama and daddy and your grandmama and your granddaddy have walked with God, when those hard times come, when they're gone, you look back and go, that's what my daddy would do. That's what my grandmama would do. And you remember what they've taught you. I remember being drugged to church as a little kid. I remember those days. I wasn't saved till I was almost 16. But boy, I remember when those preachers would preach and those evangelists would come. One that's been dead for several years now was an old evangelist named Lynn Chavis, and he did chalk pictures. And I thought it was so neat that we got one of those chalk drawings one night. For years, that thing was rolled up in the attic of our old little house over on Lawton Avenue. And every once as a kid, whenever I'd be wanting to go hide somewhere, I'd get up in the attic. And I was able to pull that ladder up behind me. And I would look around up there and had a light. And I'd look and every once in a while, I'd pull that open. And there was a picture there of two cliffs. And it had God on one and it had man on the other. And there was an opening there. And the only thing that could bridge those two was the cross. I thought about that. I didn't even put that in my notes. I thought about it when I saw this cross this morning. Brother Keith made that, and we've used it for a couple of 3 years now in the cantatas. And I tell you, I just like it standing there. Lets everybody know whose side we're on. And so, we have all of those things that we can remember. I remember Dr. Hodges. And he was preaching one day, and I mentioned that when I almost stepped off over here a minute ago. The pulpit at Bible Baptist in Savannah was about, from this floor, about that high. I mean, it was knocking 6 feet. And he got to preaching and one day, and he would stand up and he would step, and he stood up one day and he was too close with his left leg. When he stepped with his right, there wasn't nothing there. And he went off of that pulpit and that platform and hit the floor. Now, he was 60 years old when that happened. I said, "Preacher, what happened?" I said, did you get up and start preaching again when you found out you were okay? He said, "No." He said, "I thought, well, I done lost them now." He said, "I had a word of prayer and sent them home." And I thought, well, I guess that makes sense. But I can remember those things. And I'm going to tell you, if things begin to happen that I think are nutty, I'm just going to remember those old times. I'm going to remember that it may be worse now than it was then, but it's going to be okay. My mom and daddy went through it. Other family members have gone through it. I can go through it. I'll give you a second thing quickly. Read the Times, not the newspaper, the times in which you live. There's going to be lovers. Men are going to be lovers of their own selves. They're going to be covetous. They're going to be boasters and proud and blasphemers and disobedient to parents. I'll just sit on that one for a moment. Disobedient to parents. You kids know what that means? Unthankful. That drives me nuts. People do something for you and you don't even acknowledge it. Unholy, without natural affection. That means you're callous toward things. There's people that don't even care about their own children. Man, one of the most beautiful things in the world is a little baby. I mean, when a baby laughs, is there anything that makes you smile more than that? Truce breakers. They'll look at you and lie to you. False accusers, much like those accusers of Naboth. Incontinent. That doesn't mean what we say when we say incontinent today. This word has the idea of without self-control. They can't even control their feelings. They can't control their morals. They can't control their conduct. They have no self-control. And he said, they're traitors and they're despisers of good and they're high-minded. They're lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God. And they even have a form of godliness. There are people that name the name of Christ and they still act like heathen. He said, when you find somebody like that, get away from them. Let me give you a third thing. Look at verse 16 of chapter 3. Rely on the book. All scriptures by inspiration of God is profitable for doctrine. Doctrine is important. If you don't know what you believe, how are you going to know how to behave? It's profitable for reproof, which is conviction. I think it was Mark Twain that said this. He said, it's not the parts of the Bible that I don't understand that causes me problems. It's the parts that I do understand. In other words, when I do understand it, that's what puts me under conviction. Not only that, but for correction. whenever we have done wrong, the Bible teaches us how to set that bone straight. And then for instruction in righteousness. Seven kings, one after another, spiraling downward into more and more stances against God. And every one of them, they suffered. Every one of them. A whole bunch of them assassinated. One of them burned himself to death in a suicide after 7 days on the reign or on the throne reigning. And the times in which we live, we see things that we'd have never dreamed of when we were children. We hear about people. When I was a child coming up, I never heard about something called human trafficking. But yet it is all over the place now. And I'm of the firm opinion that if they find somebody that's doing that, they need to be executed on the spot. You know, as the old saying used to be on the Hell's Angels motorcycle jacket said, kill them all, let God sort them out. Well, sometimes I'd think that that might be not a real bad thing. I believe in justice. I believe we're going to give them a trial and hang them. I believe not only in the electric chair, I believe in the electric couch. They just do three at a time. All right? Read the book. Those three things. Remember those that were before. Understand the times. See what's happening. Don't put your head in the sand. Rely on the Bible. That'll get you through.